and welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is a man who could best be described as my Dolph Lundgren guy. It's Adam Hodgins.
Mark, it's a pleasure to be here.
Dude.
And never have I been described more affectionately than a Dolph Lundgren guy.
I mean, if you think about it, so we met in Toronto in 2011 when I was working the Wizard World Toronto Comic Con. I think I saw you again in 2012, but since then, like, you and I have just kind of stayed in touch basically about Dolph Lundgren movies.
Yeah, I'd say Dolph Lundgren and Photoshop of Dolph Lundgren posters are really what's kept this alive.
It's like really kept us strong. It's like bonded us. But exactly. I will say, though, you made a brilliant Photoshop of a Dolph Lundgren movie. I don't know how it came about, but I think I said something where Dolph Lundgren was going to star in a sequel to the movie 300, and it was going to just be called One.
Yes.
And then you made a poster. I don't know how you did it. I feel like you just kind of pulled a Doctor Strange and you made all the hand motions and then it just popped up in my computer.
Essentially it.
you just made hand motions and this picture of Dolph Lundgren, which I'll attach to this podcast post on Movies, Films, and Flicks. It's just him standing there with a shield and it says One. So is he fighting an army? And all right, so where is he standing? Like, how is he fighting an army and it's just one of him?
Well, I think that anything else would be unfair. If there was two Dolph Lundgrens, like no one would watch that movie because what's the point?
If this was a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie where he has a twin, the movie would be over.
Right. Right. Man.
You can't have two Dolph Lundgrens.
No, and even in the franchise we're going to talk about today, Universal Soldier, they know to only clone him one at a time.
Because imagine two of them drive like. Oh my god, that'd be the greatest movie in the history of the world. Two insane Andrew Scotts driving around. I know in Resident Evil Retribution and Resident Evil Regeneration, I don't remember two Dolphs in those either. It's just one Dolph.
Just one Dolph. They have the means for more, but it's only one.
What happens if arrows, and so in the movie One, they're shooting arrows at Dolph. What happens?
Well, I think the arrows, the lucky ones will deflect off just his sheer brawn. Like they'll hit him and they'll just deflect off. But, the arrows that follow the natural laws of science will, spontaneously combust before they hit him because it's an easier way to go. Right. And I also believe that in that poster, he's standing at the exact spot where like humanity was created, like where it first began. He's standing there just saying, like, come at me, bro. Like, anything else you got, I'm going to spring it on.
It's just an army of deadites. An army of giant rhinos.
It doesn't matter.
Now, he has to have high ground. That's the one thing. Like, Dolph, it could be one, but if they have high ground, he's done. So he has high ground. So he has that advantage.
Yeah, and I don't think it's really an advantage. It's just how he does it.
Yeah, I mean, he is tall. Does that count as high ground?
Yeah, it's like saying Tom Cruise has to be running to win. He just is running.
Yeah,
got it. Right now, wherever he is, Tom Cruise is running.
Like, he is on set right now running somewhere.
Right.
And everyone's jealous.
And you know who's I beg to differ. You know who's not jealous of the Tom Cruise movie run?
Who?
Mel Gibson has a better movie run.
Well, I picture it as like a burly run. Like, nothing graceful.
No, but if you watch, like, even the first Mad Max or Lethal Weapon or Braveheart, Mel Gibson has that same very intense, straight-ahead, I'm crazy and running run. Like, it's a thing. You got to check it out.
If Tom Cruise is running at me, I'm just admiring his gait. Like, the way his knees lift, his arms pump. I'm not scared, but if Mel Gibson's running at me, especially Expendables 3, burly Mel Gibson,
right?
I'm in trouble.
No, it's over, man. You can't let him catch you.
No.
If Tom Cruise catches you, that's a joy. You get to talk to Tom Cruise. He'll smile at you. Like, that's a fun day. Mel Gibson catches you, it is game over. You are essentially a Scottish king in 1312. Like, it's over, man.
If Tom Cruise catches you, you're going to, like, on your Instagram throughout the day, you're going to be on a roller coaster. You're going to be getting cotton candy.
Yeah, you'll be in the next Mission Impossible movie.
Yep, and somehow you found yourself splunking in Mexico, and you have no idea how.
But it's okay because Tom Cruise is running there. It's like the adult version of a safety blanket.
Just having Tom.
Just having Tom.
Oh my! And then you made another poster for me. I'm not sure how this one came about, but it was Escape from Stockholm because I'm a huge Kurt Russell fan and John Carpenter.
Right.
And so Dolph is essentially a remake where he's in Stockholm and he's escaping Stockholm, which I'm assuming IKEA has taken over the world, right?
Yep. No, for sure. And instead of being a prison, it's one big store. Commerce has taken over.
Yeah, commerce has taken over. The world's largest IKEA, and it got too big, so they walled it off. It was just growing. It was just like, it was like the zombies from World War Z. This IKEA was just expanding.
Well, here's what I think actually why they put the wall up is because the number of like derelict and homeless people by that time would be huge. And because they have that $1 breakfast, it's attainable food for them.
Yeah.
So they were trying to always, and they had to keep out the riffraff. So they put up the wall to keep the riffraff out from the $1 breakfasts.
That's evil of IKEA.
It is, but they want a certain clientele. They want that clientele that doesn't have enough money to not shop at IKEA, but enough money that they can. Like, it's people that just can afford their own home.
Jeez, IKEA is an evil. Wait, so why is he trying to escape IKEA? Is it just big?
I think he got lost and went into rage.
It's like a Seinfeld episode where they're looking for their car in the car park.
Well, I think it's a mischievous kid. I'm going to say played by Haley Joel Osment.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do that Star Wars digital thing where we make him look younger.
Yeah, yeah.
Where he just has been messing around with the arrows on the ground. Because you know, you go to IKEA, you got to follow the arrows.
Yeah.
So Sixth Sense kid is changing the arrows around. So once you leave, you can never go home.
Jeez Louise. You know, when I was working last year, it was like a desk job, and so I have to get 10,000 steps on my Fitbit. So like 2 days a week, I'll go to IKEA and do a lap on the upstairs and downstairs to get some steps during my lunch break.
So last weekend, I drove up to Markham. That doesn't mean anything to people that are not from Toronto, but it's about an hour away from where I am. I bought a new guitar amp off of Kijiji. And so while I was there, my wife says, can you stop at IKEA and get some new sheets for the bed? And I said, sure, I get to stop there. And literally I was in there for an hour and a half, lost and confused, and I left in a rage with no sheets. Like it beat me, man. I couldn't.
IKEA defeated you?
It defeated me. And nothing made more sense than the Stockholm movie at that moment in time where I was like, this could be a thing. Cause it was enraging.
Did someone mess with the arrows?
I don't know if they mess with the arrows, but I know that they train their employees to make eye contact with people and then walk away. like don't help. Just like you see somebody struggling, looking for, and again, everything's like Utherville is the name of the sheets I was looking for or something crazy like that. So I don't know what's going on. And they see, and they just whoop, and they just walk the other way. And you know, something's going on there. It can't really be a store. So there's a front there.
There's something going on.
There is.
I remember an article from The Onion from way back in the day when I bought one of the books. It said Starbucks closed all its doors and there was green light coming from the inside. that's what this is going to become, IKEA.
Exactly.
Well,
so
they're probably listening right now, so we should probably...
I'm not going to mention names, but there's an old Swiss man who goes to my church who claims IKEA was his idea.
Nice.
Like he came in to talk to me one time about like how I wasn't using the organ enough in music. So that was a neat conversation. But he was also like, so IKEA was my idea. It was, I said to my friend, we should start a store where everything comes apart. And so I don't know if it was like hilarious sarcasm or if he was telling me, I don't know. I don't know how to judge that, but he might go to my church or he might be a vicious liar. I don't know.
Sometimes some of these Europeans, you don't know if they're being sarcastic or joking or being serious.
Exactly. And so, you just smile. Okay.
Gotcha. Man, you should talk to him about that.
No, I maybe I'll get him on for the next time we do Dolph episode part two, we'll get him on and really write a free form screenplay for Escape from Stockholm.
I want to hear this. Let's do it. We'll just make it up as we go.
Yeah.
All right. So we're really starting. We're not starting from the beginning with Dolph. We're starting.
No.
Kind of later on in his career. We're not doing Rocky IV. We're not doing Masters of the Universe or what, Red Scorpion. We are
I did watch Masters last night, though.
Oh, goodness.
In prep for tonight, I did watch Masters last night.
I have a question. Does he throw a front kick?
He throws a front kick at a hoverboard.
Is it a side kick or is it a real front kick?
It's a real front kick, and it kind of spins the hoverboard spinning away.
All right, I got to find this clip because I'm working on a Dolph Lundgren front kick thing.
Okay.
So what did you think about it?
Again, the 8-year-old in me was still confused that that wasn't the He-Man that I knew and loved. But again, I've noticed a thing with Dolph, and I don't know if you're on the same page as me or not. But if you would take Dolph's performances out of the movies that he's in and put those same performances like in a movie directed by Scorsese, I think he'd get an Oscar.
Yeah, he really this movie, Universal Soldier, I was thinking this today, and I was like, if there was an Academy Awards for these kind of movies, he would win an Oscar.
Well, even not these kind of movies. The scene where he's in, and now we're gonna jump forward and we're gonna do go walk through it, but where he's in the supermarket and he's like and he's like, we're all dead meat, soldiers, get on your... And he's like all going crazy. If that was in Platoon, Oscar.
Can I read the speech to you, or should we save it for later?
Let's get there.
All right. Let's
get there. Because here's the question I want to ask you. My question is for you. Where were you in 1992 when this movie hit theaters?
I did not see this in theaters. I saw it when it came out on video in 93. So
I was exactly the same, because I imagine we have probably the same reasoning, maybe not, but there was movies that I was allowed to watch, and there's movies that I was allowed to watch on video, so in case my parents needed to fast forward something, they could.
Yeah, I started going when I was 12 is when I bought tickets. Like, I would go see Time Cop by myself. I saw Pulp Fiction with my mom. But before that,
okay.
Like you said, I didn't go to R-rated movies, but we would rent them. Die Hard, Aliens, Alien, Terminator.
Exactly. So again, I was 11 in 92, so this movie wasn't a theater option, but on VHS, that was no problem.
Yeah, and I thought this movie was the coolest thing ever. Now I think it's kind of dorky, but I just thought it was like so dark and cool and awesome and, you know, all this technology.
So, and again, in 92, there was no like... teaser for a trailer. It was just eventually you got a trailer. If you rented a movie, you'd see it, or the odd chance. But I remember for months before it came out, my friends and I arguing at school, were they robots or not?
Didn't they get switched genetically? Aren't they genetically modified? So does that...
No, but like before we saw it, we just saw the poster.
Got it. And the
quick trailer, we're like, are they robots? Is it like a Terminator? Is it so... That was the debate, was who was going to be – when we finally saw it, the question wasn't like what happens to these people. It was like, are they robots or are they people? Like, what's actually going on here?
Got it. So
going in – like when I watched this the first time, and I think some of the charm that's lost a little bit now in movies is you really had no idea what was going on.
Yeah. I mean, just plot-wise, or when you're younger watching movies, or...
Well, I think it's a combination of when I'm younger, but like also like plot-wise, you didn't really have any idea what was going on. And there was no like websites where you was like, what's the plot of this movie? What are the backstage pictures? Like, it was all just like, all I knew about Universal Soldier was that Jean-Claude Van Damme was in it and Dolph Lundgren was in it. They had crazy outfits and they might or might not be robots. And that's all I needed to get in. I was sold.
Yeah. And I was all about JCVD. When I watched it, because I had seen, Bloodsport and Kickboxer and all those movies when I was little, so
yeah, and I didn't really care
much about Dolph, and I don't remember I don't remember thinking too much about him, because I think my 11-year-old brain when I watched it in 93, not 92, I thought it was funny that he ate all the food, and that he had to cool down, and that he, you know, had little quirks about him that I thought were funny that I hate now.
No, exactly, and. Again, in the ranking of like 80s action stars, JCVD was top of my list. Like, absolutely, because Stallone he punched a lot, and Schwarzenegger punched a lot and blew some stuff up. But JCVD, man, he'd throw those roundhouse kicks, and he was just like, he brought something else to the table of the 80s action star.
He was smaller, and there was also what I liked about him in his early 80s movies is there was like a vulnerability to JCVD. So Kickboxer, he wasn't trained. He had to be trained. In Bloodsport,
exactly.
You know, you didn't know if he was going to win fights, and then at the end he gets blinded, and he pulls, like, in his movies, he'll get beat up. It wasn't until after this with Time Cop and other movies where he became basically untouchable. But
right.
I loved him when he first came out, because, you know, Dolph Lundgren was the complete opposite with, like, Showdown in Little Tokyo. But
Or I Come in Peace.
Yeah, I loved that Dolph or JCVD had some vulnerability to him. Like he wasn't the be all end all in his movies. No. He had to train to become that.
And again, his movies were always a little bit different. Like again, he did the twin thing a lot where he was like double impact.
Always twins.
Always twins. But again, JCVD was the one guy who was more dangerous without a gun than with a gun.
Yeah.
I mean, right?
Like Rambo had his guns.
Mm-hmm.
I guess Conan early on had his sword.
Yeah. Actually, the best thing about Conan, though, is that when they started filming that movie, Schwarzenegger was too big and he couldn't maneuver the sword properly because his arms were like wouldn't lift over his head because they were just too muscular. So they had to lean him out to start filming that movie.
Did they shoot around it? Did they hold off the sword fights, like just do certain scenes and then let him
I think they brought James Earl Jones in and shot all his B-roll stuff.
Wow. That's a cool fact.
Yeah, no, it's – he was just too muscular, too much Arnold.
Oh, I love that. All right, so hey, before we get too much further in, we have two listener questions that we have to answer.
I'm into this so hard.
All right, so the first question is, who would be cast for the two leads nowadays? So who would be cast instead of JCVD and Dolph Lundgren?
So I want to go on record saying this because I have an answer. But I also say if I was the guy doing it and someone's like, we're going to reboot Universal Soldier, who would you pick? The answer would be JCVD and Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah, do like they did with Regeneration and Retribution or Day of Reckoning.
Right. Like they can still pull it off. They look identical. But I would go one of two ways. So the one way I would go would be in the Jason Statham or Jason Statham would be the JCVD role because he just got those intense kicks.
Mm-hmm.
And for the Dolph Lundgren role, I would go Tom Hardy.
Oh, Tom Hardy going just throwing grenades, going yeehaw!
Right, but more like Tom Hardy from Warrior. Remember that UFC movie?
Yeah,
like
that
very intense. But the flip side you could do, and again in the world of meta movies and everything in 2018, Josh Brolin and Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, I love that idea.
Right?
I guess they would have to make Ryan Reynolds the villain because I can't see him doing the JCVD role of just stoic. I could see Josh Brolin kind of playing that and just letting Reynolds have fun.
Yeah, Reynolds just be like a very cocky, arrogant Andrew Scott.
All right. I have two crazy ones for you.
I love this.
All right. So the first one, you're going to think this is nuts, is Audrey Plaza. If you've watched, if you've watched the show Legion, she plays this bonkers character who's just awesome, and she would fill the Dolph role.
Okay, I like that you're already gender swapping, which I didn't even get down that road. So this is amazing.
She would be incredible because she's unhinged in Legion, and she would be perfect unhinged. Now, the next one, I'm either thinking Scarlett Johansson or Rebecca Ferguson from the Mission Impossible movies as JCVD.
If I was a casting director, I would go. Not with Johansson.
Yeah, because she's done Ghost in the Shell, right? She's done Lucy.
Yeah, so, she's kind of been that person already.
So to chuck in Rebecca Ferguson, who's very good in the Mission Impossible movies, right? And just have them. I just want to see Audrey Plaza driving a bus around throwing grenades and having ears around her neck and,
doing
monologues in supermarkets.
It's fantastic. Right, Oh, it's so good.
Because I love Legion. That's my favorite show. The next one, which I'm very pleased with. I wish I had four arms to pat my back with this one.
I'm into this one.
As the Dolph Lundgren role, Keanu Reeves. Because watched Man of Tai Chi when he plays the villain.
Tailor-made for him.
Just to watch him monologue about kissing ass or kicking ass, but I'm busting heads.
Oh, yes. Just to hear, every day of the week. Every day. That's what you watch.
He can do the fights. And then this is a little out there, but as a JCVD role, I love a show called Into the Badlands. And there's
Badlands is dynamite.
And there's the actor, Daniel Wu from Into the Badlands.
Yes.
Who?
100%.
I mean, that dude's awesome. I'm a big fan of Daniel Wu. I liked him in Tomb Raider a lot, actually, as well. So just to see him kind of pulling off the stoicism while Keanu Reeves just chews the scenery.
Chews the scenery. Oh, we said the same thing.
Yeah, that's right. But just picture him, like, just saying Dolph's lines and having the time of his life.
Well, that would be the thing. It would need to be the identical script.
Yeah. It would be Psycho if the Psycho remake was good.
Oh, that...
You know what
that's
I mean?
A whole other show. That's a whole other show. Is that so? Here's a point. So I was the movie guy in high school before movie guys were like a thing. Like I was the guy in 1999 that had a Laserdisc player.
Ooh.
Right. And so when the Psycho remake got out and I saw that it was Van Zandt doing it, I was like, this is gonna be the craziest, like psychological. So I had like a Psycho party at my house where we watched the original and then the remake.
Oh, no.
And halfway through the remake, people are like, what are we? The first movie was kind of dated, and this movie is newer, and it's also kind of dated. And I lost a lot. I lost a lot of my cinephile cred that day when they were like, Hodgins made us watch The Psycho twice, once in color. I don't get it.
The Psycho's so great. I could see that blowing up on you, though. And I think Jay and Silent Bob summed that up perfectly. Because remember when they're shooting Good Will Hunting 2 hunting season? And
yes.
Gus Van Sant's just in the background counting cash?
Yes.
I'm pretty sure that's what that money, that movie was.
No, exactly.
But dude,
and
Daniel Wu.
No, so I got into the Badlands because it came out around the same time as the first season of Iron Fist. And I love Daredevil on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And then Jessica Jones is all right. But I was like, Iron Fist is going to be the thing. And then I remember watching, like, at the third episode, I was just like, a show about the world's greatest martial artist should not be this boring.
I watched the first and last episodes of Iron Fist.
And even that is so boring. And so I went to work and I was just like, my buddy Scott, who's, like, into the stuff, he was like, oh, you're watching Iron Fist. And I was like, I hate it. Like, I hate every – it's a chore to watch it. But again, the MCU is this big encompassing thing where you want to digest it all so you can understand like the jokes and stuff in it. But I said, I can't do it anymore. And another guy at work was like, well, if you want to watch good martial arts, watch Into the Badlands. And I went home that night and watched the first episode and I binged the whole first season that night because I couldn't turn it off because it was so good.
Dude, Daniel Wu. But I love our casting though. I love your Tom Hardy.
Every one of those movies is a great movie.
Just imagine Audrey Plaza in full Legion mode going crazy and throwing grenades at Rebecca Ferguson.
I want to suggest something else to you that I think we could make happen. Uh-oh. Like I know we're fan casting right now, but the Josh Brolin and Ryan Reynolds idea, imagine those guys, but in a stage play version of Universal Soldier.
You could do it. It would just be...
Right?
It would just be the two of them, their battle in Vietnam, right? And then they're frozen, and then they're brought back. And it could be them on their way to a mission, remembering each other. And then, like, getting into a big, you know, like, screaming match on stage where they kill everybody. And then it's the two of them locked in a room hashing out their things from Vietnam. And it could be a great study of veterans, mental health, and two great actors going head-to-head throwing spin picks.
I think if someone with... enough clout was like, hey, Ryan Reynolds and Josh Brolin, we're looking to do a stage adaptation of Universal Soldier. I think those guys sign up.
Yeah. I would love it. What a great idea.
Right?
Playbill. Broadway.
Oh, yes. Broadway.
All right. How about we do this? Okay. Oh, wait. We have one more question. Holy crap.
Right.
All right. Would you rather have tiny Velociraptor soldiers or Frankenstein soldiers? So the Frankenstein soldiers are like Dolph and JCVD. Or would you rather have the tiny Velociraptor soldiers like they wanted to do in Jurassic World? So if you're the government, just a stock government, any country, and they're like, listen, we have to genetically modify raptors, train them, then make them smaller, then put GoPros on them and send them in the caves in Afghanistan. Or we take 25-year-old frozen veterans and we genetically splice them, and then we put cameras on their heads, and we have to make sure they're around ice, and they're $250 million each. Who would you pick?
Okay, so I want a context question. Are we going to assume that for this scenario, the Jurassic World franchise happens in the same universe as the Universal Soldier movies?
Yes.
Okay, so it's not like here's two movies you're basing this off. It's in that world where these two things exist. I would say I would be tempted to say raptors, because then you're not messing with like, you're not really messing with the idea of like someone's baby boy on the news, right? Yeah. But if I've seen the movies, I would say Frankenstein soldiers, because if things go astray, if things go bad, which they will go bad.
Yeah.
There's no scenario where this doesn't backfire on you. In every Jurassic Park movie, all five of them, there's always some guy who seems to have all the weapons. And they're like, this is a 50-millimeter, you know, tranquilizing steelhead shot, and it's going to take down a raptor. It never works. They just blast those guns into the forest, and those raptors keep on coming. They're bulletproof.
Yeah.
But in Universal Soldier, within the first half hour, half the team gets shut up, and then they got to put them on ice to get them back. So there's you can regenerate your soldiers this way, and you can also take them down if things get out of hand.
And if they get too hot, they just shut down anyway.
That's right.
Yeah.
You don't take any missions in Bolivia.
Send them. Oh, wow. I would just send them the cold. Oh, yeah. Why send them to the Hoover Dam when you know they can overheat?
There's some. Well, I think they just jump in the water and have a dip if that's what it goes on.
Yeah, you're right.
But there's got to be, like, if they can make Christian Bale's bat suit cooled inside so he doesn't overheat filming Batman, they've got to be able to have like an intercooler suit for these guys.
Yeah, especially with $250 million spent on each one.
$1992, man, that's a lot of money for a Unisol.
Oh, and also, so, all right, picture this. You're the creator of either the Raptors or the Frankensteiners, the Unisols, right? You're in jail, obviously.
Exactly.
You're in jail, and your cellmate was like, hey, man, so, why are you in jail? Well, I created raptors that were genetically modified, then we shrunk them, and then they got loose and they killed a bunch of people, right? So so think about that. Or
yeah, well, I'm in.
We took a bunch of frozen dudes, spliced them together genetically. Things went wrong. One of them went homicidal. Many people were killed, and we had to kill them all. So which one would you rather explain to people as the guy in jail? Which one would, like, one you're Dr. Frankenstein, and the other one you're kind of an idiot?
Well, I think the one you're Dr. Moreau.
Yeah. You're right.
Yeah. Right? Like, that's what's going on here. So I think that the Universal Soldier one sounds more believable. But I don't know if I'm in prison if I want to be the believable maniac or the crazy guy who thinks dinosaurs are real.
Yo, this guy said that he genetically modified dinosaurs from from mosquitoes frozen in wax.
Yeah, because essentially, at the end of the day, in prison, I just don't want to get shanked.
Yeah.
So whichever story keeps people further away from me is what I would say.
You could say some of these people in here might be Unisols.
Yeah. Imagine that. You go into jail, and there's Dolph Lundgren. Andrew Scott is your cellmate.
He would monologue all the time.
Oh, you go to sleep, and he'd be like, no. He'd just start, like, going, talking about, again, beating heads and kicking at, like, it'd be, you would get no sleep.
These people, though, all these people in this movie had to do were just go, all right, Scott, we're with you on this mission.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, no, there's a lot of psychology that's common knowledge in 2018 that would have saved a lot of time in this movie.
All right, so let's get into it. We're talking about Universal Soldier, directed by Roland Emmerich, written by Dean Devlin, who you'll know them as the pair who made Stargate 2 years later.
And Independence Day.
Independence 2 years after that. So, I mean, right. Roland Emmerich
was this their 2012. Was this their first flick?
I believe this was their first big flick. So
this
was
their first Roland Emmerich film that really went for it.
This is what got him Stargate. And then Stargate's what got him Independence Day. Right. So, you know, big duo. This is one of the movies that got them started. They had a budget of $23 million, which is, you know, even if you counted inflation nowadays, probably, what, 40? Or maybe 37. No,
it's not a lot.
Yeah, not a tiny budget. It made $36 million, which isn't a lot, but also this is, you have to remember, this is the age of VHS tapes. And this is the age of, well, yeah, VHS tapes at the time. So
exactly.
It made a lot of money on VHS. So this movie didn't make so much money in the theaters. It didn't go internationally, but it did make a ton on VHS. So this movie is a success. It had a sequel, had two terrible sequels after that, then it had two great sequels. So,
well, actually, I think that the two sequels came first that were made for TV.
Oh, and then Revenge or Kick.
And then Return.
With Bill Goldberg.
With Goldberg. And it was like in the future. And in, it's enraging to, if you're a fan of Universal Soldier, Universal Soldier, The Return will make you genuinely angry.
Yeah. It'll make you like Chris Farley during that commercial where they switch his coffee.
Exactly.
All right. So, want to get started about the opening? No, I have a theory about this movie. It's a it's a horror movie.
For sure.
This is
100%.
This movie is a horror movie. It's about two men who kill each other in Vietnam during a very brutal scene. It's quite endearing. who come back later on and, you know, come back, get their memories back, and then they just hunt and kill each other. I mean, these are two men who were killed, brought back, and then they're brain war. I mean, this is a zombie movie. There's a scene in this film, which we'll get to in a little bit, that's like a horror shot. So this is like a very, it's almost like a don't mess with people and I wonder if they're actually making a statement in this film, but I don't think so.
I don't think so, but I wish they were.
Yeah.
and so it's, I just flew to Winnipeg on the weekend and the in-flight movie was Justice League. So I was watching Justice League on the plane and it's a white hot mess.
But
it's also like all your best friends playing. And so you're like, well, at least they're trying, but there's a scene where Superman comes back to life very Universal Soldier style. And he holds Batman and he says, "You won't let me live and you won't let me die." And I was like, that's a perfect tagline for this movie because the government won't let them live and it won't let them die. It's just like, it's the ultimate abuse of soldiers.
And I love that when things go bad, the people working are like, we have to turn ourselves in. No, like, you know what you were doing.
Yeah, it wasn't like this is a humanitarian mission that went terribly askew. This is you're bad people.
don't act self-righteous now. But yeah, no. So the opening scene is brutal, right? So it's JCVD,
right.
he's at his best in the beginning of this movie because you see him afraid. And you see
him as Luke Devereaux.
Yeah, and he just wants to go home. But there's some looks, there's some acting in here where he's legit. And he comes up to Dolph, who's, you know, he has a wooden bowl, and he's just finishing up his ear necklace. He's been cutting ears off of people. And he has two captives. And, you know, JCV is like, I'm going home. Let's go. And then Dolph is like, you're a traitor. And then JCVD is like, no. And then they prove it. And then they murder one of the men, and then JCVD tries to run away with the woman, and that ends terribly bad with a grenade, and then the two kill each other.
Yeah. And there's a great stab with the bayonet shot in that fight.
He just gets him in the gut.
He gets him in the gut, but just like the way they film it is a real horror shot.
Yeah,
it's a real Jason Voorhees shot.
It looks pretty practical too when he bayonets Dolph in the gut.
Well, that's what I want to say about this movie. For $26 million in watching it, it looks like there's no CG in it as far as the big effects go. And when you watch like the first Terminator, that movie still kind of holds up, except for the stop motion at the end and the scene where he takes his eye out. And those scenes really take you out of that movie. There isn't any scene effects-wise that take you out of this movie.
No, none. It looks like it's all practically done. Like when they go on this mission, so I guess we'll jump into it. So 25 years, these people are like, oh gosh, this guy has a necklace with ears, and they kill each other, and they're like, oh well, just we'll call him MIA. And then this guy's like, take him to this place,
and then they zip him up for the credits.
Cut to 25 years later, and there's a huge military operation where I think most of the budget went, with all the planes and cars and cargo planes and massive buses landing.
They also invited the press.
Yeah, they invited the press, which, you know, hey, let's do a black op operation and invite the press and then
our first mission for these experimental soldiers. Let's bring the press.
And the best thing to do is not give them any information, because that just makes them want more information. So they load these Universal Soldiers up. They drop them a mile and a half outside of the Hoover Dam, and it takes them 4 minutes to swim a mile and a half, which I couldn't do it.
No, Jason Momoa could do it, but not anybody else.
Yeah, he's the only, and maybe Kurt Russell, just because.
Oh, Kurt Russell.
Just because.
So good.
I feel like he has a good swim.
Like, yeah, I feel Kurt Russell is who I would cast as the sergeant in this movie, who's like searching them down.
Ooh, that'd be good. I bet you he just swims in lakes in Montana and just has like a great, you know, breaststroke. And
he actually swims in a lake in Muskoka, which is up in Ontario. It's like cottage country in Ontario. Him and Goldie Hawn have a cottage up there.
Nice. Yeah, so they're swimming there.
Yeah, they're up there just doing their thing.
So they get to Hoover Dam. I'm not quite sure what the plan is, because they just send in a guy who's supposed to be a repairman, the dude from Gladiator, played by, what is his name? Gladiator. Ralph Mulder, GR76. And right. Also, he walks up as like a repairman. He gets shot. And then Dolph.
Why in a hostage situation is there a repairman is a valid thing?
That's what I thought. It's a good Trojan horse.
Put a camera guy who's here to hear your demands.
Oh, yeah.
And then something.
And then he does something stupid and gets shot. So, yeah, repairman comes up. And then he kills the guy with the bomb. And then Dolph and JCVD kill the other two terrorists. But a really cool shot happens right after this, where Dolph is standing in the foreground. JCVD is standing in the foreground. Dolph is in the background. It's kind of like Dolph is kind of blurry, but you see JCVD see these two people, and it brings him back to Vietnam. But in the background, you just have Dolph with his gun up in the air looking mean. It's a horror. Yes. It's a great horror shot. I mean, it's a good shot.
No, here's the thing is that it's this action movie, but it's done really well. It's just when you go to the VHS store in 93, it's in the action section, so it gets no attention.
Yeah.
But it's really well done.
I do think there could have been three scenes cut out of this movie, but we'll get to that in a little bit. So they do all this, and then they get taken back to their lair, and of course they go to the press, and they're like, hey, we're not telling you anything. However, Ali Walker, who she does a great job in this, Veronica Roberts, her character, I mean, she acts her living face off.
And this was her first, like, lead role in a movie.
I was reading Ebert's review, and he's like, she's good. She sells her line reading. She's basically acting against Jean-Claude Van Damme not saying anything, and she just kind of has to, like, look at his butt and do some innuendo.
What I say, the way I look at it is that she's almost doing his lines for him.
she's doing
this kind of double talk all the time, and you're like, oh, so she's carrying the whole conversation herself because she's up against a mannequin.
Yeah, what are you doing? You can't do that. Wait, stop. Hey, wait, what are you doing?
Yeah, what's your name? Where are you from? What do you want to eat? You want to get the beef? Like, we'll have two specials.
She's speaking for him. I wonder if she got double. So everyone goes back to their little lair. Ali Walker and her poor camera guy, rest in peace, come up. She gets caught. They try to drive away. And they get caught, and they send Dolph.
Because they find the repairman.
Yeah, they find the repairman who's laying in ice. She gets some pictures, and the driver, the cameraman, as they're making their getaway, he flips the station wagon somehow. I'm not sure how, but he does it. And Dolph and JCVD go. I know they're characters in this movie, but I'm just sticking with Dolph and JCVD, not Luke.
And that's the way it should be.
That's right. They walk up to him. Dolph murders the camera guy. He just shoots him in the head.
No questions asked.
No question. Just boom, done. And then JCVD gets a flashback, and he does the same exact thing to Dolph that he did in Vietnam, where he hits him in the head.
Right.
And then he tries to run away, and both times fail, obviously. But knocks Dolph down. He runs off with Ali Walker, and they take off.
Now I'm going to ask you a deep question.
Let's hear it.
Did Dolph kill that guy, or did the men behind the computers kill that cameraman?
Oh, Dolph did. They had no control. Those dudes in there. I mean, all right. So you have Edo Ross, who's the general, right? The character Edo Ross. He's not smart. They're like, JCVD had a flashback. He froze. We should take him out. He's like, no, he's fine.
No, I'd like to see his backstory, because clearly he's in this position above his pay grade.
Yeah,
so
he
you
is.
Wonder. Something's gone wrong where he's got something on the government. Sort of like, well, we're just going to give you this cushy computer job for now because we can't have you in the field because you're a loose cannon or something's gone on. But there's a backstory there, which I think we should explore at some later time.
You know, he's just a bad boss. I think he's not qualified, so he kind of acts like a jerk because he knows he's not good at what he's doing.
Right. And then he's plagued by the ice. He's plagued by it.
Oh, no. Oh, you're talking about Woodward.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I was saying, Edo Ross is the one that's like, I don't care if they're malfunctioning. We move on with it. And then Woodward is like, all right, you're the boss. So, yeah. Yeah. All right, whatever. And then he is plagued by the ice. There are two scenes in this movie where he looks down at ice like he's never seen ice before in his life.
Yeah. And it's like everywhere they go, it's like, here's the MO. There's mass destruction. Things are exploded. And there's a tub of ice.
And then
surprises them every time.
There's a scene, though, where the general, Edo Ross, is like, yeah, yeah, get over the ice.
Yeah, it's ice. Yes, we know it's ice.
And poor Garth. And then Garth is working with him. Garth is like, he probably thought he was getting a cushy job, but he didn't. And he just got stuck with these guys.
Yeah, well, nobody signed on for this.
Yeah, you're right. So
if I'm in the military and they're like, we're going to assign you to the reanimation of dead soldiers unit, I'm like, this is never going to be a thing. I'm going to sit behind a lab and pretend to do this for years, and it's never going to be a thing. We're never going to do this. But then they do it.
Wait, did this just happen? Yeah. Yes. Wait, we made it work?
Yeah, this... Now what do we do?
Like, they hire you and I to do a job. Like, this will never happen. Let's just do some crazy stuff. And then there's, like, an explosion, and we actually pulled it off. So we created...
We got little raptors running around everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Tiny velociraptors are everywhere, up to our ankles, just biting us. You know, just running amok, chewing on wires. So
fantastic.
You have Garth. You have Iceman.
Oh, yes.
He's Woodward, but let's call him Iceman.
I like that.
And then you have Ed, the general.
Right.
So there, Garth.
Yeah, sorry, yeah, Garth, but he's just like, in one scene when they're talking to each other, he just starts flipping the bird because he's just like, I got to be angsty in this moment.
Yeah,
Garth. Like, I think it's when they're at the hotel, like they go to the hotel, like it's all shot up.
They're like,
we lost him again. And he just flips the guy the bird. And I'm like, why are you so angry right now, Garth? Like,
for Garth doing that. I wrote in my notes, heck yeah.
Okay, no, I get it. But I'm just saying, it's not very professional.
Yeah, you're
in a moment of high stress. You want to be as professional as you can.
Yeah, this job. Well, but I think you are right. This guy, this general's over his head. Woodward is stuck here. He's obviously not very smart. He's someone's brother because he's obsessed with ice. Garth was thrown in. This is the B squad, and somehow 100%. They created A material. So you have the B squad trying to take care of A material, and that's where the whole movie goes wrong.
And with Ali Walker, you have the opposite because you have her in this B-roll job, but she's an A, like, journalist.
Yeah, she's good.
So it's her tenacity that gets this whole thing running when she was just kind of given the crap assignments.
Wow. There's a lot of themes in this movie.
I don't think they're themes as much as we're painting them.
we're making them like this.
Yeah, we're doing it, but it's okay. It's happening right now.
Got it. All right, so
he pushes the car.
Yeah,
the
30 car miles an hour. 30 miles. The car runs out of gas, so he pushes it 30 miles an hour. And there's also some weird timing in this movie I kind of want to tell you about. Where, let's see. So he's pushing the car. They escape, and they run out of gas, so he's pushing it. Goes to 30 miles an hour. The car is being pursued by this bus that's probably going 70 miles an hour. And they're like, they're 4 minutes in front of us. So they're 4 minutes away from JCVD and Ali Walker when they get to the hotel that is home to the jerkiest hotel guy ever.
Who is the, like, awkward salesman from Hercules and Xena.
Really?
Yeah, if you watch, he's always trying to sell Hercules and Xena togas and stuff.
So I guess he is an awkward salesman in this one, too.
Exactly.
All right. So they show up. JCVD starts to overheat. So they put him in a tub with ice in 4 minutes. They've been there. Like, this, I don't know what the military was doing because they got there probably before they got in their room. And then they had to wait while she carried all the bags of ice. They should have seen her taking the ice in. So what were they doing
do you think, just throwing this out there, because we talked about the caliber of intelligence in that team, do you think they were confused by the 24-hour clock that the military uses?
They just didn't understand it?
Yeah, they're like, they're 4 minutes ahead of us. And like, actually, sir, they're 3 hours ahead of us. You're reading that clock wrong.
Yeah, you took a nap after they ran away for some reason, and now they're ahead of us? Because I think you're right. They just read the clock wrong. Or they read it upside down.
There was some confusion going on there.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, you're right. I think that works. So they just couldn't read it. They get there, and they shoot the entire hotel up, and somehow Dolph and Ali Walker, or no, JCVD and Ali Walker escape, but it leads to...
But they shoot the whole hotel up, but not only do Ali Walker and JCVD survive, a couple in the throes of passion survive. Remember, because they're like in the bed, and then Jean-Claude Van Damme's in the bed with them and puts the gun up to his face to get the keys?
Yep.
So not only did these ultimate soldiers shoot up the entire hotel, the only four people there survived.
Well, and the hotel owner and his mom lived.
Right.
So they just blew up a lot of drywall.
Yes. They had the stormtrooper aimers on.
They connected. I mean, if they were trying to shoot drywall, their aim was very good.
Right.
All right. So I know we're joking around about this movie. We do love this movie.
But no, I want to say, honestly, I legit love this movie.
It's just kind of dorky.
It is dorky, but I'm not ashamed that I love it. Like, there's guilty pleasures. This is not a guilty pleasure. This is a recommend to my friends all the time movie.
Yeah, it's like a Deep Blue Sea for me. Like, there's no guilty. If Deep Blue Sea is a guilty pleasure, then so is Lawrence of Arabia.
Exactly. Now, we're not gonna get into a big thing. I'm not gonna bunny trail sidetrack this thing, but out of 10, what do you give The Meg?
6.
Okay, very good. I give it an 8. My son, who's 10, I took him to go see it. He gives it a 20. It's his favorite movie of all time.
You give it a 20?
Yeah.
It's made $500 million worldwide.
No, it's thoroughly entertaining.
I just wanted... I'm going to buy it. All right, so on that bombshell, let's take a break. Actually, let's pre-order The Meg, and when we come back, we'll talk about the second half of Universal Soldier. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I just pre-ordered the 4K Blu-ray, DVD, HD DVD, Laserdisc, VHS copy of The Meg.
Oh, yeah.
Only $7,000.
Do you think that hold on. So just because I'm like this, I have Universal Soldier playing on silent in the background. Is Adam Baldwin in this movie?
I don't think so. What scene are you at?
I'm at the scene where they're at like the car junkyard, and then they blew it up, and all the guys are walking around on fire. And I'm not a betting man, but I'm pretty sure I just saw Mr. Baldwin there.
I mean, he is in Independence Day.
Yeah.
Ooh. Well, I'm gonna do that later. Yeah.
As we talk, I'll do it right now.
All right. And then I'll ask the third question we have, and I'll start answering it while you're doing that. So the third question is, why does JCVD like beating up bar or restaurant patrons? So if you think about in Kickboxer, he brutally, I felt for the stuntmen in Kickboxer. He hurt them. Like he didn't just fictionally hurt bar patrons. He really beat the living daylights out of stuntmen. But in this one, so they escape. There's another escape, and we'll remind it a little bit. But they go to this restaurant, and Ali Walker and JCVD are there. They both order specials. Ali Walker leaves to go for the longest payphone call in the history of the world.
Yeah, it was at least $7 for that phone call.
Yeah, and she was there probably 90 minutes, I would say. Because he has 14 plates.
Oh, so, he eats all the food.
Yeah, so I mean, at least 90 minutes. So he's there eating. The waitress comes up to him. Sure, she's a little surly, but she has this guy who's being quite rude, and he's eating lots of food, and she rightfully asks, hey, she should have done it earlier, but hey, do you have enough money to pay for this? And he's like, what? She calls out her husband, who has been slaving all day, which he says.
They are not villains in this movie.
No, they are not villains. He comes out, and you know what? They come on a little strong, right?
That's their vernacular, man. That's their culture there.
That's how they make money too. Like this is their restaurant. That's how they make money. And if you see, there's a lot of big people in there, a lot of muscular men for some reason. So they got to do a lot of food. So him making all this food for JCVD could have kept food from all these other big dudes that are in there.
It's all the high protein diet they've been eating.
So they come up. He's like, how are you going to pay for this? JCVD's like, I don't know how I'm going to pay for it. And the guy's like, listen, man, I'm going to throw you out here and kick your butt, which JCVD should just let him do it.
But he also reaffirms that the food is good.
Yeah, the food's good.
He's like, I've been slaving over the slop all day. The food is good.
Yeah.
I know it's good. Like, but he's saying, like, good job. I really like your, I don't know how I'm going to pay for it, but I really like it.
Yeah, I mean, what's that worth? So the guy's like, listen, I'm going to beat you up. And JCVD goes, I don't want to hurt you. Okay, well, run out. You can run 30 miles an hour. Or right? Just let him punch you a bunch of times. Like, that's
you can
not...
run 30 miles an hour pushing a car. Freestyling it, he could go at least 60.
Yeah, so he could get out of this fight. And then JCVD really hurts this man. JCVD is probably 33 in this movie. And this guy is probably, what do you think, 56?
56 and not in peak physical condition. Yeah. He is definitely a hurting individual physically.
He probably – that guy's going to need some – he has broken ribs after this. And probably a hand, maybe something with his knee because he falls bad. And his back and neck are going to have trouble. So this guy
– I'm saying anybody that size – just falling over, regardless of the impact of the kick, it's gonna be a big deal.
Yeah, he gets jettisoned. And the people in this restaurant are locals. They probably are friends, they know each other.
Relatives are there.
They go to step up and get their friends back. You know, maybe their uncle, maybe their friend, they went to high school with them, maybe something like that. So they go to be like, hey, this guy is trouble in here. He eats all this food, he doesn't pay us back, and then he beats up Hank. So they go to fight him. And JCVD brutalizes him. And then at the end, Allie Walker comes back. JCVD's eating popcorn, like all cute looking. He's like, and she's like, oh, was this an exciting lunch? And then he just looks at her with a nice little smile on her in his face. And I'm like, listen, man, you're not a good guy.
How do you know how to flirt?
Yeah. And he broke a window. He caused probably $4,000 in damage in this restaurant.
And that's $4,1992.
Yeah, without medical costs. Just because he didn't want to pay for his food.
Now, here's the question for you, and for the filmmaker and all of us. Would you rather edit this fight out where he just talks and apologies are made and maybe this guy punches Van Damme and Van Damme sells it to make him like, you're right. Or would you rather edit in a scene where the kitchen is shown and they're like abusing kids and cutting coke, and like you understand that this is actually at its heart a bad establishment.
They should have had the cook, Hank, just be rude to his wife.
Yeah.
Like, why the hell are you serving him? Or you know, just make him like,
or even hit his wife.
Yeah.
You didn't check if he paid, smack.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, get out of here. And then his buddies laugh in the background. And then they get get everything beat out of him. All you have to do is add three lines. Yeah. And then this disgusting, misogynist, abusive man gets destroyed.
Gets his comeuppance.
And you're like, haha, he didn't pay for his 14 specials, and he destroyed your restaurant. But there's none of that in this movie. She just calls her husband. He's like, I've been working on this really hard all day.
He seems genuinely upset about the specials.
Now, when I was 11, I probably thought that scene was fun. But I'm watching it now. I'm like, just bring back Dolph.
Well, I was just happy he was kicking stuff.
Yeah.
Right, because at 11, you're like, there's only so much time between the next time Jean-Claude Van Damme's going to kick people.
I want more kicks.
Yeah. Also, was that not the scene where he was reading the cigarette package and was like, smoking is bad, the Surgeon General recommends you don't smoke, and gives like this morality lesson to Allie Walker about smoking?
That was before, I think. She's like, all this happens? Oh, no, because he lectured her on seatbelts, too.
Yes, but I think they were sitting at the restaurant and they were ordering, he was reading the cigarette package.
And there's also a weird aside in this movie where she goes, I would kill somebody for a cigarette. And he goes, you would kill somebody for a cigarette?
Yeah, this guy who's killed literally 36 people by now.
Yeah, innocent people.
Yes.
I mean, who knows, one of those guys in the fight could have died. So, all right, what do we jump ahead to? Oh, we forgot about the gas station scene, correct?
Yeah, I also want to say that it seems like every car in this movie is like a classic vintage car that's just not been well taken care of.
They are not from 1992. And the reason why, they probably had to wreck a lot of them.
Right. So but again, like they got away from the hotel in like a 56 Monte Carlo.
Yeah.
But it was just not well taken care of. So it wasn't a classic car, it was just a beater. But yeah, you're right.
There's a lot of old vehicles in this film.
Yeah, it's like an episode of Batman from 66.
Oh my god. And I love the shark scene in this one. So I guess they escape the hotel, right? And
yep.
They go to a gas station where he
trades outfits with Joe.
Yeah, he takes Joe's outfit, and which I kind of like later on. He's like, what, he calls the waitress Barbara, and she's like, okay, Joe. But so they go to this place.
But didn't they put Joe in the trunk of the car with the ice in his Universal Soldier outfit?
Yep, they did. So they swapped outfits.
So Joe has frostbite for sure.
And an outfit that doesn't fit.
Right.
So, and he had a name tag on his badge. So they, and Joe did nothing wrong. They pull up in a car. JCVD throws the keys at Joe. And he's like, park it. And then they go into a room where they make a whole bunch of innuendos. But they take a tracker out of his leg. The Universal Soldiers show up. They get horribly tricked.
Burnt alive.
Yeah, and the majority of them die. But then This is when Dolph is hiding in the back of the car. And then he starts choking JCVD. JCVD hits something, hits the brakes. Dolph flies out, goes traitor. And then this is when Dolph kills the general and takes over. This is when The movie gets great.
Well, I love that Woodward and Garth are so terrified of him that they continue working on dead bodies to make him think that they can save them.
Yeah.
Well, he's like, just keep working. If he knows he's dead, it's over.
And what I don't get, right? So he goes, hey, Dolph, your heat sensor's on. This is when Dolph has taken control, and he's awesome. He has his ear necklace, and he's just...
Yeah, right back to his old Andrew Scott self.
I mean, he's, oh my gosh, I love this scene. So Woodward goes up to him and is like, hey, can I talk to you, Dolph? And with his ear necklace, he goes, I'm all ears.
Yes.
And then he says, hey, your heat sensor's showing that you're hot. And Dolph goes, uh-oh, nap time.
Yeah, he really pulls out the Yuck Yucks comedy kind of one-liners.
Yeah, he becomes very Looney Tunes-y.
Yeah.
But the problem is, they have him in a cold room. They should just run.
This is the thing, man. Just blow it up. Why are they injecting him with, like, neck serum and stuff?
And then later on, they just blow it up with a grenade. So they could have grabbed some grenades, thrown them while he's getting the cooling thing, and just run out of the vehicle. Problem solved. But for some reason, they try to, I don't know, go in there and neck serum them for no reason.
In a hazmat suit.
Yeah, they both die. Garth and Woodward die horribly.
Yeah, but this is the horror side of the movie.
Yeah.
That whole, like, walking in while he's sleeping, trying to get the serum in him, and then he grabs the arm and, like, the music and the shots. And that's when – and then he starts talking to him, and you know he's going to kill him, but he's talking – like, that's when the horror movie starts.
And I love this. This is when Dolph turns it up to 11, and I have a smile on my face. Then he pulls up to this truck stop in his vehicle. He walks up to these truckers, some of the worst-looking truckers I've ever seen. But he knocks out three truckers – with just one kick. Three kicks, but his left leg never touches the ground. So he does one kick, one kick, one kick. Knocks out three truckers in a row. Wasn't that amazing?
And to be fair, if I could kick like that, I might be knocking people out too, just for the triple kick fun.
I would just do it. I don't think you can be arrested. If you can knock out three people with three kicks, you don't get arrested.
Well, because I think that is an unbelievable story.
Yeah.
Like, if you're at the truck stop and someone's like, officer, I saw this man kick these other three bigger guys in the face, three in a row, knocked them all out. No cop's going to believe that.
So you're telling me this guy pulls up in a large militarized vehicle. Wait, they're in Utah. They don't talk like this. So you're telling me this guy pulls up.
Well, let's pretend they do.
All right. So you're telling me that there's a man comes out, necklace of ears, right? Kicks three large men in the face. Without getting his foot on the ground. I don't believe you. Like, they probably just think it's a drunken brawl between truckers, and they're blaming a zombified Dolph
Lundgren. when you were doing that line, it sounded just like the sheriff from Dusk Till Dawn.
Oh, dang. So what I love, though, is like, yeah, I saw where the car went. And Dolph goes, do you have a pencil? And the guy goes, sure. And then he looks at a guy. And then you go, I like your belt. Can I have it? Is that scene, too, where he takes a trucker's belt?
Yeah, he just takes it.
And then, so we already went over the diner scene. But during this time, Dolph carries two of his former Unisols into a freezer in a grocery store. And this
yes.
is where it gets amazing. So
this is where it gets Scorsese-ish.
Yeah, I mean, just, you're right. I mean, this is like full Pesci, Daniel Day-Lewis type stuff.
100%.
So he's kicking one of the soldiers. He goes, get up, soldier. Then he walks out. And for some reason, the people in this grocery store have not left. People do not like leaving in this movie. Those guys, you know, Iceman and Garth didn't want to leave the truck.
There were families with children in this grocery store that just didn't leave.
They did not. They just want to see what's going on. Dolph comes out, and I'm not gonna R-rate this one because I'll keep this PG-13. Dolph comes out.
I love it.
And goes, dang it, the whole platoon's dropping like flies. What the heck are you staring at? Do you have any idea what it's like out there? Do you? Well, I'm fighting this thing, man. It's like kick ass or kiss ass, and I'm busting heads. It's the only way to win this war. And these idiots, these traitoring mothers, they're everywhere. And I, Sergeant Andrew Scott of the U.S. Army, I'm going to teach them all. But he does it much better.
I don't know, man. That was pretty on the nose. Like, I'm sitting here trying to hold back the emotional tears of just hearing you perform maybe the greatest speech in any Roland Emmerich movie. Like, that's a better speech than the today we celebrate our Independence Day.
Well, I'm with – and the way he – so I showed my wife Megan, and she's a Dolph fan. She actually once – I saw when I was working at Comic-Con in Austin, and Dolph walked by me in the airport, and I was like, man, that's Dolph. She's like, Mark, go talk to him. Hang up the phone now. So she forced me to go talk to Dolph, which was pretty awesome. And he was Absolutely. A cool guy. So I showed this to Megan, and she just had the biggest smile on her face while watching it. She knew she hadn't watched the movie, but she just saw his monologue, and she loved it.
Well, because it's great acting.
It is. It's very good acting. And it annoyed me. I'm like, why hasn't he done this more? Like, he nails this spot. Like, this is – do you think people just were like, oh, this is an action film?
I firmly believe there's certain people in Hollywood – and I believe that JCVD is one. I believe that Dolph is one. And I believe that, like, Christopher Walken is the prime example of one. He's the quintessential one, is that when they get called or go in for a movie, they ask a very specific question. They say, do you want me to act or do you want me to be Christopher Walken in this movie? And I think lots of times there's like, just come and do your JCVD thing. Just come and do your Dolph Lundgren thing. But in this movie, I think they were like, no, we want you to act. And I just think that lots of time these big action guys get typecast in that way.
Yeah. He's acting in this scene.
He really is. There was a movie he did where he played a punk drummer, and I'm trying to remember the name of it.
Oh, Command Performance.
Yeah, and he was dynamite in that.
So get this. I don't know if I told this on the pod. I don't know if I told you. So I'm in Austin. I walk up to him. I'm like, hey, you know, Mr. Lunger. And he's like, hey, no photos. I'm like, that's totally fine. I was like, hey, I just want to say I'm a big fan. I love the recent Universal Soldier movies. I'm also a big fan of your work in Command Performance, man. I thought that was a great directorial debut. He turns around to me with this shocked look in his eyes. And he goes, what's your name? I'm like, Mark. He's like, I'm Dolph. And he shakes my hand. He's like, nice to meet you. And I'm like, yeah, I was like, that's awesome. I was like, yeah, but I was, you know, then we just kind of chatted about his movies. And I was like, he ain't directing again. What happened? What's going on? And we just talked. And then he's like, yeah, I got to catch my flight. But in the beginning, I think he was trying to, like, maybe blow me off a little bit because I was going to talk to him about Rocky IV.
Right.
Like, if he dies, he dies. But the look on his face after I dropped Universal Soldier and Command Performance, he just turned around, shocked at me, and shook my hand. So he's like, yeah, oh, this guy's for real.
Exactly. Now, I do want to say, as like Rocky IV as Rocky IV was, Creed II, there's some potential for that to be like the next level.
Oh, he might. He's gonna act in it. Dolph Lundgren's gonna act in Creed II,
and it's gonna be amazing.
Yep, Oscar.
It's gonna be amazing.
Now, I want to say, so we cut to a scene. They get out. He beats up everybody in this diner. He gets Ellie Walker a bus ticket, and she walks away. And so she's talking to him. He's like, get home. I just got to go home. Oh, no, actually, I'm sorry. They meet a scientist who just basically explains he's genetically modified, and all he wants to do is go home, and all Scott wants to do is kill.
That's at the Veterans Hospital, right?
Yeah, they're talking to Law and Order, right?
Yes, they're definitely talking to Law and Order.
Jerry Orbach, Law and Order, but that's his name. He just dumps exposition on us. And then, so they get back. They're going to leave. He talks to Allie Walker. She goes to a bus, comes back. This scene is a minute and 55 seconds, right? During this time, 20 cop cars and 40 cops had time to park their cars in strategic areas, jump out of their cars, and point their guns at them in 1 minute and 55 seconds. So when the bus is pulled away and she turns around, there's 40 cops and 20 cop cars behind her. In a minute and 55 seconds.
It also follows the rule of movie sound, where if you can't see it, you can't hear it.
I mean, did they kick their cars in neutral? Like, the sound of opening doors didn't make any noise?
Always thought that if a policeman drew his gun on you, if you're an unarmed female, they would need to say something like, freeze, or police. But all they do is they cock their guns for a dramatic effect when the bus pulls away.
Like, I love the visual of it. It's a funny gag. I didn't remember it happening. But just the coordination of these police officers to sneak up, park their cars, get out in a minute and 55 seconds is exceptionally – I mean, they're good. Do they do this a lot? Like, you know how during the parades –
Well, it was the first flash mob.
Did you know during parades that Shriners, I guess, they have those little mini cars that they drive around and do spins with and stuff? Do these cops practice this during parades? Like the single woman ambush of 40 police officers, one woman –
Well, I think it's a special unit. Like, there's the FBI, and there's the SWA, which is a single woman ambush, and they're just a unit that's what they're very specifically designed to do.
The single woman ambush. I mean, they're good at it.
No, that would be a great TV show. This SWA
Chicago.
Oh, SWA Florida.
Yeah. What are we doing today, Hank? Well, you know what we're doing today.
We're going to go find us and a woman to ambush dramatically.
I've named everyone Hank.
No, and I think that's your go-to.
Yeah.
Right?
It would just be that, the entire episode. So basically they hunt down and then they sing, then they ambush. Highly unnecessary. Waste of government money.
And I'm going to say one cop could have told her, hey, get in the car, you're under arrest.
Yeah, hey, you're wanted for questioning. He probably has his partner with him, so two cops.
Right. But one's a rookie.
Yeah. And then maybe four cops max, because just two are driving by. Like, this is worst case scenario. So you have a veteran and a rookie, or you have just four because they happen to be driving by.
Right. Have you ever been the guy who got pulled over and then a cop drives by and pulls over to see if the other cop needs assistance?
Hey, man, what's up?
And then someone you know drives by and sees you pulled over with two cop cars and looks like you've done something really wrong?
Yeah, no, that hasn't happened to me quite yet. I haven't had two cop cars.
It's happened to me, and it's super embarrassing.
Well, you got. Didn't you get arrested for bringing Universal Soldier copies from America into Canada?
Not yet, but they haven't caught me.
Yeah, I mean, you were bootlegging DVDs since 99?
Since 99, I'm bootlegging DVDs.
Universal Soldier.
I remember the first time I saw bootleg DVDs at a comic convention, and it was in 2004. And I was like, this exists? This what?
I need
it. It's amazing. It reminded me of just yesterday. I went, my wife and I were out of town, so we went and picked up our kids. And then I stopped because my son wanted to get some new Xbox games. So I was like, let's go to the Hawk Shop. So I went to this Hawk Shop that is the first time he's ever been to a pawn shop in his life. So he walks in and he's like, there's video games and TVs, but like swords and guns and guitars. Like, it's just a bizarre place. And he's 10 and he's adorable. And he says, Dad, is this the black market?
There's like there's rhino horns.
Yeah. He's like, is this the black market? And I was like, no, son, this is just a pawn shop. It's not the black market. But no, bootleg DVDs, it was something that always blew my mind. But now the digital age is taking that away from us, man. We don't have handheld media anymore. Yeah. I don't need to bootleg. I just log in and watch it.
I do love my Criterion Blu-rays. And I like my Vudu. I can buy Blu-rays and do the digital copies. And I like the commentaries. So I don't know if y'all listen to this podcast. We've covered 5 Resident Evil movies on our podcast. And on each one, there's 2 commentaries. So for each Resident Evil movie, I've watched a movie and listened to both commentaries. So that's the level of film nerd I am.
But to be the bad guy, like the rebel, I like to buy a DVD, not open it, but then stream a pirated copy online just so I can have the best of both worlds.
So I bought it, but I want to watch the HD version. Like I want to see the 4K even though I bought the movie.
Right. Or I want to see the extended edition of the 4th Rambo movie.
I love that 4th Rambo movie. All right, so they get arrested, right? Cops, the SWA arrest them. They get a bus, and the 20 cop cars become 2 cop cars and a bus.
Right, because the dangerous part of the mission is over, which is finding the woman. But transporting the genetically altered soldier, that's easy peasy. We can all go home for that one.
Like, they don't have a GMS squad, genetically modified soldier. Wait, GMSA squad, genetically modified. Wait, GMA, yeah, genetically modified ambush. Wait, genetically modified soldier ambush, GMSA.
Right. They're not, they're a defined group, but they're not that defined.
Got it. I mean, that's super defined. Actually, they were on their way from,
they were on their way, but they got confused by the 24-hour military clock. So they were there hours late.
It's like them in Spinal Tap, just walking the backstages, trying to get to the stage. They're in the corridors, lost. So
exactly.
They're chained up. Dolph comes out of nowhere in his vehicle, and homeboy from Gladiator's driving. He's still alive. He's one of the Unisouls.
He's one of the ones that just will relentlessly hangs on.
Yeah, and he just, you know, eats meat. That was a funny scene. I like that guy.
That, you know what? Like, again, that's acting, man. Like, get up there and just grab that raw steak, like a big piece of prime rib, and just dive into it, buddy. Like, and that's,
he ate it.
No, he did. And that's one of those things that, like, you can act a certain way, but to physically eat raw meat, I don't know, man. That's like another pay scale.
I wonder if he got a bump for that. I wonder if he got a raw meat bump. When I worked on film sets, we never got that because no one ever ate raw meat. But I wonder if that was in his contract where he gets a bump.
Well, I don't think he had any lines.
Yeah.
So he technically wasn't a speaking role.
Featured
role.
Yeah. Tiny Lister was in this too.
Oh, yes, he was.
But he suffers a end, not a good end. This is pre-Fifth Element where he's awesome in Friday.
He was also in The Dark Knight.
Oh, yeah. Wait, he was in The Dark Knight?
Yeah, on the boat with the bomb.
Oh, yeah. Wait, Dark Knight Rises.
No, it was the one with the Joker. And the Joker had the two boats, and he's like, it triggers on them both. Which one's going to blow the other boat up?
Wait, I've messed up my... Oh, that's Dark Knight?
Yeah, Dark Knight Rises is the one where the city's under siege, and it's not even a Batman movie, and it's the worst movie ever.
Batman.
Yeah, it's the worst.
All right, so they're on this bus. Dolph comes up. Dolph drives up, kills the driver, and he says, what does he say?
Not only, but Dolph drives up, and the cop who's in a Crown Victoria car signals him around.
Yeah, go around.
He sees this big military bus that they've been... And then he's just like, go around. And then Dolph, or I guess Gladiator, just sends that car off the road.
Yeah, just go around.
And then the other guys driving the bus don't take notice of that. They're just like, oh, something's going on. And then he rams them from behind.
And then he drives around, shoots the driver, and Dolph goes, you should do something. Your driver's dead. Like this, and then he's like, woo-hah! And... eventually, Dolph and Allie Walker. I keep wanting to say Allie Larder. Then I'm missing up with Walker. All right, so.
Yeah. Just call her the closer.
The closer. Wait, that's Kyra Sedgwick.
Well, who was Allie Walker?
Wait, Allie
Walker. The profiler.
Okay. The profiler.
She was the profiler, not the closer. The profiler.
Wait, who was the mentalist? Yes. No, I'm joking. so they get on there. And, I got to say, he kills the bus driver. And the bus manages to drive itself at speed for 1 minute and 55 seconds without flipping or slowing down. So we have 2 1-minute-and-55-second scenes in this film with the 40 cops and then the bus driving for 1 minute and 55 seconds.
Yeah, time. Well, I think because the dead driver fell onto the steering wheel that he kind of maintained its course.
Got it. So he was just kind of laying on it.
Right. And then Van Damme pulls the wire out of the seat to pick the handcuffs.
Very smart.
No, that's Unisol 101 right there.
That's what they teach him. So they're driving. Dolph is just throwing grenades one after one, going woo and yeehaw, and just
which is my favorite scene, maybe of any movie
ever made. Lawrence Arabia, Gone with the Wind.
Because they say a good villain doesn't know he's a villain. I beg to differ. A good villain takes pure joy in throwing grenades at people.
And yeehaw.
And yeah, he's doing the yeehaw because he's got the cowboy belt on now that he stole from the guy.
And successful grenade strikes. They actually flip the bus. They're actually successful in wiping out the bus.
Right. However, but there is a thing where he throws them in and then the profiler throws them out of the window. And just as they go out the window, they explode and knock the bus around.
Yeah, that's true. I think he was given faulty grenades, Dolph, because those grenades took about 30 seconds to explode.
Yeah, well, I find they took different amounts of time to explode.
Yeah, so once again, the B squad of military, they probably gave them the after weapons.
Yeah, the duds.
Yeah, they gave them duds.
So these ones didn't get past the first set of grading, but you can have them, Unisols.
Right, so the closer, no, she's not the closer. Which one is she?
She's the profiler.
The profiler. The profiler gets rid of them. The bus flips. They both escape, and Dolph and Gladiator fall off a cliff and blow up.
Or so you think.
Yep. So, and then Allie and JCVD go to his parents' house, and conveniently the mother speaks French.
Of course, because he's from Brussels.
Yep. So he walks in. She kind of speaks French. They're in there. The problem is they're sitting in there. The power goes out. This goes off. This goes off. Dolph takes keys away. No one was expecting Dolph to come, so he didn't have to do any of that.
No. So not even like 11-year-old Adam definitely thought that Dolph was dead when that bus went over there. And that Adam's just like, well, this is a very long, extended, happy ending with these French people. This is the feel-good moment of the day.
Like that music, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, like right? the Creole music is playing for some reason.
Like you could almost recut it and just have him like see his mom and then credits.
Yeah, done. And so then Dolph comes back. And I have an article that I wrote for Movies, Films, and Flicks. I'll attach it to this pod post where I write about how every single villain in a Dolph Lundgren or in a JCVD movie has like final villain has terrible tactics. So every movie, every final fight that JCVD has ever been in, the people he's fighting fight like idiots. And I love Dolph, but he has about 47,000 opportunities to kill. I know he's playing with his food, but he's already been killed by this guy once. Like maybe he's just going insane.
Twice if you count the bus explosion.
Okay, right. But I get, you know what though? He's loving it. He's getting rained on. He's delivering lines. He's basically chewing on lines. So yeah. I guess by having him draw it out, it's better just to hear him.
You know what I just realized?
Hmm.
The main villain in Hard Target was JCVD. He died because of a faulty grenade too.
Well, I need to research this. Oh yeah, the faulty grenade. Didn't it shoot up in the air or something?
Well, he took it apart, but then the fuse blew across his hand.
So wait, oh man, I had a good one. Oh, there's one couple things I want to talk about in this fight scene. So there's a scene where for 30 seconds Dolph is being punched in the face by JCVD. Nothing happens. However,
this is all perpetuated because Dolph is still getting his injection shots, his muscle enhancers. And JCVD has not been getting those. So he's getting progressively weaker as the movie goes along.
And what I do love, though, is there's a scene in this fight, if you should just watch it, where JCVD lands a body blow on Dolph. And you can kind of see his face going, and then he's right? like, all right, I've had enough. And then he picks up JCVD and throws him. But I just watch this scene where he gets hit in the face a lot. And then there's a body blow where he's kind of like Andrew Scott, the character's like, that wasn't good. I need to finish this.
Yeah. But it is a thing where Dolph Lundgren is genuinely the toughest guy on any movie set. Like, legitimately.
Randy Couture could have gotten him in Expendables. But other than that, I can't think of anybody else.
No. Like, when he put Stallone in the hospital in their boxing scene, like, he put him in the hospital.
He made his heart stop.
Right? That's a thing that happened in real life.
Yeah. It's, you know, somebody wrote, they got into an altercation at Cannes when they were screening this movie. It was like set up. But there were a bunch of publications that wrote JCVD was about to beat the living daylights out of Dolph Lundgren.
No, not even close.
I'm like, what are you talking about? But I'm getting annoyed by a 1992 faux fight to get publicity.
Which is kind of sweet.
Yeah.
Although I do love, my favorite thing about Jean-Claude Van Damme is that when the Power Rangers movie in like 94 came out, Tommy Oliver, Jason David Frank, at the premiere saw Jean-Claude Van Damme, who was one of his like idols. And he's like, thank you for coming out, Mr. Van Damme. I'm a big fan. And Jean-Claude Van Damme said something like, oh, your movie's crap. Like he really kind of like dissed the Power Rangers movie, which to be fair was pretty crappy. And since then, the Green Ranger has had like a vendetta against him. And now that he's a cage fighter, like an MMA fighter, he's challenged JCVD to a cage match.
And CM Punk.
But can you imagine the fight money for a Green Power Ranger versus JCVD, like Ultimate Fighting match?
Oh, that'd be amazing.
We have to go.
Yeah, we need it. I need to see this. But I think that's when JCVD was loaded up on cocaine. Remember we did Street Fighter and he's like, I was on cocaine the whole time?
Yes.
So maybe it was just a coked up JCVD.
It could have been.
Why is a coked up JCVD watching Mighty Morphin Power Rangers?
I think because it was like a martial arts movie, so then he got invited to that. Like, I think Chuck Norris was there as well.
Oh. See, Chuck would just give a thumbs up.
Yeah, Chuck is all smiles.
Yeah.
And doesn't age.
No. Mm-mm. And he pushes the earth down when he does push-ups.
He does.
All right, so
he does.
This big fight goes on. It's raining. It must be I would hate to do this in a production film this because they're just getting poured on the whole time. But the good thing about rain is you don't have to worry about the background, so you can kind of keep it tight, which could be good for budget, so that's fine. So the fight scene happens. Dolph could win 70,000 times. He doesn't, but he's still great. In the end, he loses. JCVD wins.
In a wood chipper.
Yeah, in a wood chipper. And JCVD just gets to stay home, even though they're going to find him.
But I also hated, even as a kid watching this, and I love this movie, I hated that JCVD needed to use steroids to win.
Yeah, he cheated, didn't he?
He did. He was like, I'm going to be the good guy, but no, I'm going to steal your drugs to win this fight. And I remember that just, I was like, it would have been so much better if just his will would have beat Dolph.
That's like in Transporter, if Jason Statham just steals a guy's cocaine and just sticks his face in it and just gets real jacked up for a second, then destroys everybody.
So
heroes don't work like this.
It would have been Crank if that was the case.
Crank. Big Godzilla fight.
Oh, yes.
I love that scene. I love Crank.
That whole idea is brilliant.
That movie, that's an A movie.
Yeah.
That's for critics to watch it and watch it on the same level that they're watching, I don't know, Lawrence of Arabia. I keep going back to that.
No, that's your good pull.
Crank is an A movie for what it is. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, and I think that's what makes good movies and television is that where everybody knows exactly what they're trying to achieve. So, like, have you seen any episodes of Jean-Claude Van Johnson?
Yeah.
So that's an example where everybody knows exactly what it is they're trying to do, and they all do it excellently. So it's like the pillars of industry, right, where you have service, price, and quality. They all need to be the same. It doesn't matter if they're all high or all low. Once they're all the same, that's a very stable business. And so if everybody in a movie knows what they're trying to do, then it's an A movie, whether it's a action film or a romance comedy or a kid's movie. It understands what it is. We just watched with our kids last night Peter Rabbit, the new Peter Rabbit movie.
That movie's a sugar rush.
But again, everybody in that movie is taking themselves exactly the same amount of seriousness, and it's just everything lines up. And so it's like
I had a very good time with that movie.
Oh no, we the whole family was just like dying laughing. But again, they were taking the material seriously. They weren't taking themselves seriously, and that's what that movie needed. So a movie like Crank, again, is like they all knew exactly what they were trying to do. When they call Ron Jeremy to come into that movie and make a cameo as a protester, it's a certain kind of movie that's gonna do, and everybody did their job perfectly.
Can I ask you a question on Peter Rabbit? I do love the scene where Daisy really keeps breaking her ribs. That's really inspired. And I also love the taxi driver who says, "I have many enemies."
Yes.
But I was worried about Rose Byrne's character. She's probably in my top five favorite actresses. But her character in this movie was not smart.
No.
You know, there was something a little wrong with her, correct?
Right. Yeah, well, again, she's talking to rabbits that are wearing coats. And again, the guy says it. He's like, "They have jackets and we never ask why." And so, yeah, a normal person would ask why. Someone without mental issues would ask why are these rabbits wearing coats. But again, they address it, so it's okay.
Yeah, you're right. I love that scene. All right, cool. So Universe Soldier, he takes drugs and he wins. And then he just gets to hang out with his family and listen to Creole records.
But with the caveat that he's going to die.
Very soon.
Right? That's what that scientist did at the war veterans, was that his metabolism, whatever the pseudoscience was, that he has not long for this earth. This body is going to burn out. So it's kind of this bittersweet, like, he's with his family, but he's not around long.
So that's $250 million?
Yeah.
Jeez Louise. So he's just going to kind of hang out with them. What are they going to talk about?
I think he's going to ask the Steve Rogers list. What was Star Wars? What was Rocky? What goes on here?
Yeah, Fog Hat.
Oh, yeah, Fog Hat. What's that about? You know. But again, is this really weird? This weird. But there's something about family. So legit. Here's something that's legit. I've got two sisters, Mark. One, like, ran away from home in 89. And she called us up this year to come on. She says, "Can I come back to the family?"
Whoa.
And yeah. So I haven't seen my sister in 28 years, which is roughly this timeline. And she came up at Father's Day. She came to my house and we hung out and the whole family was here. And very quickly, it was just like, you go back into family mode and you don't talk about what you didn't do together. You talk about where are you now? And so I feel like that's what's going to happen to Luke Devereaux here. He's going to be like, "Yeah, I was gone for 30 years as a human killing machine, but let's go harvest the crops tomorrow. Like, let's go do some farming."
Yeah, this reminds me of the time I was at the Hoover Dam killing terrorists.
Exactly.
You know what? While he was on this earth, though, I would definitely have him really do a lot of work around the farm.
Oh, he could push a tractor 30 kilometers an hour or 30 miles an hour.
He would fix my barn. He would fix my fence. I would work him until he overheated.
It would be like the first season of Smallville.
Oh, is that what he was doing?
Well, just Clark doing farm chores.
I love this TV show.
Oh, imagine that. The Devereaux Farm is what it would be called.
Oh, man. And they come up with a great cheese.
Yeah. Every episode ends with a very sad song where it's just like, yeah, but he hasn't got much time left. And then it's like this, like, Dawson's Creek kind of ending of every episode of just like this really emotional moment.
The parents who's ever there, they're sitting at a fence watching him. They're like, but he's going to die soon.
And then season three finale is the mother dies. And then Jean-Claude Van Damme has to realize, like, play with the emotions of, like, I was supposed to go first. I wasn't prepared for this.
Wow. This is getting deep.
No, we could. There's money here, man.
Each episode needs to take place over a day. Yes. That way, like, when three seasons come in, let's say they get 12 episodes a season, that way it's only been 36 days.
Right. So it's not unlike 24.
Yeah. It's just
a little bit different.
Each episode's one day.
Exactly.
Or we could have every episode is 12 hours. Who knows? I don't know. But we'll get into it later.
It's this or that, but it's very much... We've given away the season three finale here, but we haven't given away the season five finale, which is really going to blow your mind.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, we'll save that for the next podcast.
I will say, in the last fight on Universal Soldier, there's a scene where, you know, right before he kicks him onto the combine spikes, I guess that's what they're called.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, again, doing his fantastic Andrew Scott woo thing, and he's hamming it up. And he does the thing where he does the fist pump in the air. And then Jean-Claude stands up in front of the fire, like slow motion stands up in front of like vibrant fire. That's like my visual memorization of this movie is this him standing up by the fire.
That's a cool shot.
It was a really good shot. It was just like, and then Dolph Lundgren walks into the barn with his hands behind his back, like a sergeant, like a commanding officer giving a guy instructions. Ah, it's so good.
So, final thoughts about this movie. How would you, if you had to sum this movie up, what are your final thoughts about this film?
My final thoughts about this film were that if it was never released in 92 and it was released today, someone found it and said, oh, this is a movie we made in 92. We're never released it. We're going to release it now. I say it still holds up.
I think Dolph would get more respect for this performance.
Yeah. Well, I think it holds up, but I think it's not the lame action movie that it gets remembered as. It's a genuine, like, thinker. Like, we've unveiled some potential themes here. I think that, you know, in 2018, this gets viewed way, way differently than it would have in 92.
Yeah. No, I do think there are some interesting themes about keeping them alive. I mean, PTSD, you know, taking these soldiers back. I'm going to show I teach film, so I might show this to my students. Have them break it down.
No, just do it. When I was in grade 11, in my economics class, my teacher, Mr. Patnell, he was fantastic. But I said to him, I said, can we watch The Road Warrior? And he's like, Mr. Hodgins, why would we watch The Road Warrior? And I said, well, because essentially it's a movie about supply and demand and scarcity. And he was like, well, maybe we will. And the next day we watched The Road Warrior, and he had drawn up a Road Warrior assignment for us to do. And he's still showing it in his class each year.
Oh, my God. You know what? I'll show it to my class. Because, I mean, I think it's good. I think it opens up a really great conversation about Australian cinema and action at the time. I showed him Nosferatu today. That was awesome.
Oh, did. So I have a DVD of Nosferatu, it's like the Black Label Society has redone the music, so it's like this heavy metal, yeah, version of Nosferatu.
Oh, that's awesome.
No, it's fantastic.
I love Shrek. Not the movies.
No.
I mean, Shrek 2 is good.
I think that we were ripped off by not getting the Chris Farley Shrek.
Yeah, that would have been interesting. Did he do a Scottish accent in that?
I don't know what – I haven't really heard any of his stuff. I just know it would have been a way different movie if Chris Farley would have been Shrek.
Tommy Boy. All right, so my final thoughts, I love this movie, put a big smile on my face, and also you and I, as fans of Dolph, as you and I are earnest, real fans of Dolph, this is probably my favorite Dolph performance, and his finest moment is when he's doing that monologue in the supermarket.
Yeah, and I'll say that easily Dolph is the shining star of this movie.
Oh, yeah, he's just loving it. And, you know, JCVD's character is his performance is very uneven in this movie, which I think probably could be a problem with the direction or whatever. But I also think it's pretty selfless of JCVD to take the stock good guy role and let Dolph get all the good lines. So there is some selflessness here.
But JCVD eventually gets his turn in Day of Reckoning.
Oh, yeah. He's so good in Day of Reckoning.
But that's when it gets flipped, and he's this cult leader of the Unisouls, and he gets the wicked speeches, and it's fantastic.
He's probably held on to that for all those years. He's like, I need it.
Oh, that was therapy for him. He's like, just envision Lundgren at the other side of the screen and go.
All right, so how about this? I had a great time doing this. Let's do it again. Let's pick another movie.
Absolutely.
Let's come back and do this, and I just want to say thank you so much for coming on. And also,
well, thanks for having me.
And then thanks for all the listeners. Make sure to go to moviesfilmsandflicks.com, FLIX.com. Check out everything we write. Also go to iTunes, type in Movies, Films, and Flicks, FLIX, and rate, review, and subscribe. Adam, this was awesome. I think we...
Mark, I want to add one thing.
Yeah.
If I could, any of the listeners, if you want to come up with the best Dolph Lundgren movie that he never starred in, I will make them, I'll Photoshop them a poster of that movie.
Oh, wow. All right. So, you know what? I'll put this on Facebook tomorrow and I'll just say, okay. What movie should Dolph Lundgren have, or what is the best Dolph Lundgren movie that he was never in?
Yeah. The best movie he's never in. And then we go from there and then we pick which one we think would be the best. And then I'll make that poster.
I love it. Awesome. So I'll put that on Facebook. If you're listening, make sure to head to Facebook or the site and comment on that. And so for me and for Adam Hodgins, this is Movies, Films, and Flicks. We'll see you next week.